Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. I'm excited about this week of podcasts because we're going to talk about theories of therapy, therapeutic theories.
We're going in a somewhat different direction.
A little bit, yeah.
Than we normally do.
Yeah, because usually we try to focus on specific concerns, issues, struggles, problems. But today we're going to talk about different strategies or different approaches that can be used to address some of those things.
Different therapeutic approaches.
Correct. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, as we were putting this together, I was thinking, what would be a good introduction to what we're going to do this week?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have one.
You don't?
No.
I thought that was somewhere good. I was
right?
Like, all right, he came.
No, the one thing that did occur to me was that every psychologist practices from a certain theoretical perspective.
Right.
Okay, we all learn how to do therapy
mm-hmm.
from a particular theoretical mm-hmm. point of view. I think many of us end up being what we would say eclectic. We do a number of...
The most common is sort of an eclectic combination, a bunch of different pieces.
But then it occurred to me that I think it's helpful for people who are either seeking therapy or even in therapy to mm-hmm. know about these different theoretical approaches. We know about them mm-hmm. as professionals, trained professionals. We know about them. But I'm not sure that other individuals know. And what bothers me, what concerns me, and the reason I think what we're doing this week is valuable, is that when people go to websites, individuals mm-hmm. who are seeking therapy go mm-hmm. to websites, there is usually a discussion about a person's theoretical perspective mm-hmm. and their point. But I don't think most laymen know what that means.
Right.
And so I think that the discussions that we're going to have this week will help to clarify some of that, or I hope that it clarifies some of that.
I hope so. And you know, There's a number of challenges that I think people will experience as we go through some of these things because, mm-hmm. you know, we don't always know which therapeutic approach is going to be best for a person.
That's right.
There are some therapeutic approaches that are better for some things than other things. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to know that ahead of time.
Right.
Some people respond really well to something that you would not expect them to respond well to at all.
Right. And there isn't what we call an isomer. There isn't a one-to-one correspondence.
Right.
You can't say, well, I have this problem, so I want to use this approach. Frequently, we will get people will come to us, and they are referred for cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
Okay, that's a specific kind of therapy. Well, going into a situation, I'm not sure that I'll use cognitive behavioral therapy. I have to understand the person well enough mm-hmm. to know what kind of intervention is going to work for that person.
Right.
So it's always troubling when we get a person who says, well, I need cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
I'm not sure that you need that. You know, you may need that and other things.
Right.
So that's the other thing that I think we'd like to clarify
and
parse out during the course of the week.
Right. So over the course of this week, we're gonna hit on some of the big models.
These are mm-hmm.
there are other models out there. Some that we're not going to be able to get to. Some that we kind of see as models, though I'm not completely sure that they are actually models. You know, religious based therapy, for example, isn't really a therapeutic model.
Right.
It's applying some of these other models through the lens and filter of a religious perspective.
In a religious context.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, mm-hmm. You know, Christian counseling or anything like that is not necessarily
a therapeutic
approach in and of itself. It's just a way that it's used. It's a perspective that's used and applied
with some of the these other ones that we're talking about.
But it's not a technique. Cognitive behavioral therapy is a technique. Christian counseling is not a technique.
Right.
It might be cognitive behavioral therapy within a Christian context.
Right. From that worldview. Right. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start sort of from the beginning. And so today, we're going to talk about psychoanalytic therapies, psychoanalytic approach. And, you know, our podcasts throughout the week typically are relatively short, you know, 15 to 20 minutes or so. And we're going to keep these to that sort of limit.
Right.
So know that there's a lot more to all of this than what we're going to necessarily talk about here. We're going to hit some of the big stuff, but know that there's a lot more detail. When we teach these theoretical perspectives, well, you can have an entire class on...
You could do a three-hour class. You can do a three-hour class just on one theoretical perspective.
Right, right. Or even longer. You know, there's... Well, for the next podcast, we're going to talk about behavioral therapy. Right. Well, there's an entire graduate program dedicated to behavioral therapy. To the one we're talking about today, there are postgraduate certificates and centers that are designed to train people who have already been through medical school and graduate school to teach them how to do psychoanalysis and things. So these are much more complex than what we're going to present here, but we're going to do our best to give you... The basics and the core of the information.
Some fundamental understanding of the theoretical approaches that we use.
Right. Mm-hmm. So with psychoanalytic approaches, we say that it's from the beginning, that we're starting from the beginning because this all came from our good friend, Sigmund Freud.
No, you know, people laugh about Freud or they criticize Freud. Freud was really the first psychologist. I mean... In a very real sense, he was the first psychologist.
Yeah.
He was trained as a physician. He was trained as a neurologist, but he was really the first psychologist. And that is really the beginning. He was certainly the first child psychologist.
Right.
You know, so we, yes, we pay homage to Dr. Freud.
And Freud had a fascinating background because, and through that background, we can see how we got to psychoanalysis.
So you can see his theory in his personal story.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Because not only what he, as you said, he was a physician, he was trained as a neurologist, but he was also, he also practiced clinical hypnotism.
Right.
So he would work from that perspective of being able to make people more suggestible and work with them in that way. And so it's not surprising that his theory, his model, sort of transitioned into this idea that we are driven, we are motivated, we are pushed into behaviors and actions and worldviews based upon unconscious subconscious motivations.
Yeah, as a neurologist, Freud knew that the brain had a couple of different sections.
Right.
He knew that we had a thinking brain that we used to control our emotions. Mm-hmm. But he also knew that underneath that thinking brain, there were all these raw emotions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was concerned about what those were doing.
Right.
And it was below a conscious level.
Right.
And he referred to that as the unconscious, that we're driven by things that we may not always be aware of.
Right.
That they're below, they're underneath, beneath a conscious understanding.
Right.
And that those things drive us.
Right.
And so he developed a whole... So he started with biology, an understanding of the human brain, and developed a process called psychoanalysis, which sought to uncover the unconscious.
Right.
To discover what was in there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's from this model that we get a lot of the sort of memes or stereotypes that we think of when we think about therapy. Mm-hmm. So when you see, like, you know, the therapist sitting there with the notebook sitting behind as the patient is lying on a chaise lounge type of thing, looking at nothing and just talking, and the therapist is sitting there taking notes. That comes from the psychoanalytic approach. Mm-hmm. You know, people don't typically lie on my couch. I don't know if they lay down on your couch.
No.
But the reason
I have one teenager who does.
That's true. I do too. I have a couple of teenagers that do.
But they're doing it. They're not doing it for psychoanalytic purposes.
That's for a different purpose.
Right.
But the reason that kind of approach was taken with psychoanalytic approach is because There's this idea called free association. Right. Mm-hmm. And so what the therapist would do is the idea that you just kind of ask a very open-ended, nothing question,
right,
and the patient starts talking. And right, that through this free association, through this talking that's not stimulated mm-hmm. by any particular stimulus, nothing that the therapist is saying, and the reason that the therapist sits behind so that they're not seen is that so that the patient doesn't see any emotional reactions or get any cues from the therapist about what they're saying,
mm-hmm.
and that the patient will just keep talking and will talk about these things very openly, and they'll meander around until that subconscious or unconscious starts to emerge in some of the things that they're saying.
That's right. And it was for the same reason that he did dream interpretation.
Yes.
That, you know, our dreams are another way to access hypnosis, mm-hmm. a third way to access the unconscious.
Right.
So these were different ways
right.
of accessing what was going on in the unconscious.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Freud worked from that view. And, you know, a lot of the things that we think about with Freud, we kind of look at through more skeptical eyes now.
Right.
But at the time, those things made a lot more sense.
He opened up a whole world
right.
that would had heretofore been unavailable to us.
Right. You know? If you think about the way in which society mm-hmm. at the time worked.
That's right.
You know, some of the views that he has about, you know, he talked about the psychosexual stages of development mm-hmm. and, you know, he talked about these different motivating drives, a lot of which are based upon our relationships with our mothers and the wives' relationships with their husbands and
right.
their fathers and things like that. And all of that came from really the society's view at the time, but also the population that he was working with. I mean, his primary patient were married women.
They were women, and this was Victorian Europe.
Right.
And in Victorian Europe, women had no rights.
Right.
They could not own property. Husbands could do whatever they want, include having mistresses, they could do whatever they want. They went to men's clubs.
Right.
They had all the rights. They had owned all the property. Women had no rights. They couldn't own anything, and they were completely dependent on their husbands.
Mm-hmm.
And they also didn't have a voice.
Right.
And what Freud hypothesized was that women were oppressed, and they were turning all this inward.
Right.
And it was that which was causing them their problems. In fact, they would, some women repressed to a point where they actually developed physical symptoms,
right.
which we know that can happen.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so, Freud was dealing with disenfranchised women who had no rights.
Right.
And that was his main
right.
population that he worked with.
Right. So he in working with that population, you know, a lot of his theories developed and
right.
grew, and in a way, because it was a relatively restricted
mm-hmm.
population that he was
right.
working with, his theory was relatively restricted, though, because he didn't really know it at the time. I don't think
right.
anyone really thought of it at the time. You know, the theory itself was relatively restricted. And,
mm-hmm.
and so that's why, you know, psychoanalysis and psychoanalytic approaches aren't really for everyone.
Right.
You know, these are processes that take a very long time.
Yeah.
You know, people mm-hmm. who are in what they just call analysis, they are analyzed. This is a process that lasts years.
It can take, an analyst must be in analysis
right.
for 10 years. It takes
right.
takes an enormous amount of time
right.
to become an analyst
right.
and to do analysis correctly.
And to be clear about what you were just saying,
mm-hmm.
if you want to be a psychoanalyst,
right.
you have to be in therapy with a psychoanalyst yourself,
right.
and you have to do so for a period of time, a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
before you can become an analyst,
that's right.
a psychoanalyst.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's part of your training.
That's part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have to go through analysis. My brother-in-law went through analysis.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be a psychotherapist. He's trained as a physician,
right?
But he became an analyst, and he went through that long period of analysis.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said it was very helpful,
yeah.
but it takes a long time, and it's very expensive.
Yeah, the model is fascinating, and it evolved over time. So we have
yeah.
There are, so we talk about the Freudian psychoanalysis, psycho analytic approach. Mm-hmm. And then there's also what they call the neo-Freudian psychoanalytic approach. And these are sort of people who came after Freud and took his model, his perspectives, mm-hmm. and adjusted and shifted it as time went on. Mm-hmm. Right. And so we have sort of, his immediate
disciple
right. like Jung and some of
Karen
those.
Karen Horney and others like that.
And we get things like, we get different therapeutic approaches, like the Jungian approach, and we get to many extents the object object relations theorists, and some of these different approaches that really look at the same unconscious or subconscious concerns, but just do it in a slightly different way.
That's right. But the emphasis is still on uncovering the unconscious.
Right. Mm-hmm.
One other point that we should make about Freud is he gave us a vocabulary that we still use.
He did.
We protect ourselves. We don't completely understand. We don't appreciate the unconscious. We aren't aware of our own inner feelings.
Right.
But we protect ourselves from those feelings. Mm-hmm. And he developed a whole list of what are called defense mechanisms.
Right.
And we throw those terms around with abandon these days. You know, we talk about, well, that's just projection or that's just repression. Uh-huh. As though those are Freudian terms.
That's just, it's so just he justification.
Gave us, that's right. He gave us a whole vocabulary of defense mechanisms.
And there's a lot of other things that come from this model that are part of our daily vernacular that actually came from him. You know, when we talk about, obviously, Freudian slips.
Right.
Okay, so what a Freudian slip is that's your, you know, in theory, that's your unconscious or subconscious
revealing itself
right. at inopportune times, perhaps. Right. That's and so right. when you have that little slip, it's the idea that that what you're really feeling is coming out, even though you're working to try to suppress it.
Freud also said there are no jokes.
Right.
And he said, humor is when you have biting humor, you really are expressing your true feelings, but you're trying to mask them with humor.
Right.
So he made the famous comments, there are no jokes. But whenever I say that to people, they
laugh.
And disagree.
As though it's a
joke. No, I really was just joking. I said, no, you weren't.
Maybe.
No, but you have, you know, again, I think the point with Freud is that we tend to criticize and reject what he was saying, but we use and we base many of our current therapies are based on his where he led us, and so we stand on his shoulders certainly.
So again, we could talk for hours about the way in which Freud's perspectives are integrated into our daily lives. You know, when we talk about people having oral fixations or, you know, when a person is really clean and tidy and everything, we say, oh, it's so anal.
Right.
Well, that comes directly from his psychosexual stages of development. I mean, it's...
Right. And he was the first to recognize that we go through these stages of development. Now, he focused on psychosexual stages of development, but they are not unimportant. I mean,
and I think that has to do with the population he was working with.
And again, you have the oral fixation, but we know today that if you don't bond with an infant, you know, and so if you tie bonding into the oral fixation, you see the importance of it. We know the importance of toilet training and that particular period of child development where they're trying to become independent. Mm-hmm. And so even those early stages, he wasn't incorrect. He may have overemphasized them, but he wasn't incorrect in their importance, because we know today that if you damage a child early on, either through abuse or neglect, you're going to have lifelong consequences of that.
Absolutely.
That's all he was saying.
Yep.
Is it? We have to go back and look at what happened during childhood.
Exactly.
And kudos to him for talking about children. He was the first one who said, children are not just little adults.
Right.
They are different. And they develop in stages.
Right.
And he articulated that very clearly and gave us a working framework to develop theories of child development.
Absolutely. So, all right. We'll just end there.
Pause.
We're there. So tomorrow we're going to talk about sort of the next stage. What happened, sort of the psychological, I don't know what word I was going to say there, the psychological evolution that came as a response, I guess, to psychoanalysis.
That's right.
So from the things that we can't see, the things that we're not even aware of, to the almost purely observable. And we're going to talk about behavioral therapy tomorrow.
There's I think it was Alfred Lord Whitehead said, all philosophy is a footnote to Plato. And in a very real sense, all psychology is a footnote to Freud.
Yeah.
I mean, we begin with Freud, and most of what happened is either an extension or an extension of Freud or a reaction to Freud.
Right.
So,
and the best example is our next one.
It's coming up tomorrow.
So we'll be back tomorrow with behavioral therapy. So until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.